and looked up at me. Blue number 13 blazed. "You're going to like my dirty mouth even better after tonight." I closed my eyes as he drew my right nipple into his mouth. His tongue swirled as he licked and sucked and then caught it between his teeth and tugged hard before moving to the left one. A soft moan fell from my lips, and I forced my eyes open to watch him. He was devouring me with his sinful mouth. The reality was even better than the fantasy that had played through my head over and over for the last week. After taking time worshipping my breasts, his tongue traced a path from my cleavage down to my belly button. Then he dropped to his knees. His hands spread my thighs wider. God, I wanted his mouth on me down there. I gripped the edge of the desk so tight my knuckles turned white. He took a good, long look. I was sitting before him so bare, so exposed, that I had an overwhelming urge to close my legs and hide myself from him. But then he licked his lips again. He was actually salivating to taste me. It was the single most erotic thing I'd ever seen in my life. He leaned in close and blew a steady stream of air from the bottom to the top of my sex. The cool air connected with my wetness, and every nerve in my body zapped to life. My breathing was completely erratic just from the anticipation. I couldn't imagine being able to breathe once his mouth was on me. He looked up, and our gaze met. "Watch me, Aubrey. I want you to watch me as I eat every last drop of this sweet pussy." I couldn't respond. Anything that came out of my mouth would have been completely incoherent. He didn't wait for an answer, anyway. He hauled my ass closer to the edge of the desk and buried his face between my legs. Ravaging me, he sucked and licked, coaxing my body to the brink of orgasm, and then pulled back, lessening his suction and slowing his pace. He was not allowing me to fall over the edge. Each time my breathing started to level out, he would start all over again. It was merciless and maddening, and I was beginning to grow desperate. The third time he started to slow down when I was coming close to orgasm, I gripped his hair, my hands fisted in his thick, damp mane, and I tugged, urging him to continue. "Chance, I need to." "Not yet." Part of me wanted to kill him, but that part was overruled by the part that needed to desperately find release. "Please, I need to." "Not." He didn't get the chance to finish. I yanked hard on his hair and pulled his face to me. I heard him chuckle, but it did the trick. After that, he dove in hard, licking and biting, thrusting his tongue in and out of me until he again brought me to the brink. Once I was dangling on the edge, he sucked hard on my clit and sent me spiraling over. I gasped his name as my orgasm rolled through me. He didn't stop until my body felt spineless and it was difficult to stay in the upright position. Chance lifted me from the desk and carried me to the bed, gently setting me down. Only a minute ago, I had been spent, yet seeing him naked as he stood there suddenly had me recharged. I heard the crinkle of a condom wrapper and then watched him slip it on. His hand glided down his thick shaft, and my body came alive again. He was beautiful from head to toe, and every firm inch in between. When he was done, I reached out and threaded my fingers with his. He climbed onto the bed and lifted our entwined hands up over my head, easily restraining my arms. Hovering over me, the head of his cock aligned perfectly with my opening. He searched my face, almost studying it, before our gazes locked. Then he kissed me sweetly as he gently pushed inside of me. He eased in and out a few times slowly before sinking deep. Rooted, he groaned and held himself in place briefly, his face telling me that being buried inside of me felt so good, he didn't want to move a muscle. I wrapped my legs around his back, the new position allowing him to penetrate even deeper. Fuck. He closed his eyes and leaned his head back. I loved seeing him struggling for restraint. We easily found our rhythm together and rocked with a fervent pace. Our bodies slick with sweat, we glided up and down, hips swiveling round and round until we were both shaking. I moaned as I felt him begin to come undone. His pace quickened, and he drove into me deeper and deeper until we came together while staring into each other's eyes. It was hours later, drained of many more orgasms, when I finally fell asleep. Filled with new promise and hope, the last thing I remembered thinking as I dozed into dreamland was that I couldn't wait to wake up tomorrow to be with Chance again. The sun blazed through the tall windows, warming my naked body. I had no idea what time it was, but I knew it was at least early afternoon. I lifted my arms over my head and stretched. My muscles ached, although it was the kind of pain I relished. I'd had boyfriends, a healthy sex life even. Up until last night, I would have gone as far as to say my previous dalliances were somewhat satisfying. But what happened between Chance and me put anything that ever came before it to shame. Smiling at the thought, I reached back to the bed behind me, anxious to reconnect physically. Finding Chance's spot empty, I turned and listened for signs of where he was. It was quiet, but a minute later, a knock at the door answered my question. I wrapped the sheet around my body and padded to the door. A woman dressed in a housekeeping uniform was standing with a cart when I opened it, expecting to find Chance. I pulled the sheet tighter to my body. Can you come back in a little while? We have a late checkout today. The woman looked at her watch and back to me. 15 minutes? I had no desire to rush to get ready, but nodded anyway. After I closed the door, I looked around both rooms, even though I knew I was alone. There was a nagging feeling in the pit of my stomach. I never wanted this trip to end. Chance had given me no reason to believe things between us would continue once we arrived in California. In fact, he'd been pretty clear that the trip was it for us from the get-go. But hadn't last night changed everything? I wanted to allow myself to think it really could have. Yet there was that feeling. In the shower, I closed my eyes and could see Chance hovering over me in the early hours of the morning. It was our third go-around, and very different from the first two times. Our desperate, frantic race to be together was behind us, and we slowly poured emotion into every beautiful movement. I'd had sex before, but until that moment in time, I'd never really made love. The warm water of the shower washed over my skin, and I replayed those last few moments over and over. "You're an amazing woman," Chance said. "Thank you for making my fantasy come alive. I hope all of your dreams come true. You deserve that, Aubrey." In the moment, I'd thought it was a beautiful sentiment, but suddenly, an intense urge to vomit gurgled up from my stomach, and my eyes flashed open. He was saying goodbye. Chapter 11. I checked out of both our rooms and sat in a lobby for 6 hours. It was ridiculous of me to do. All of his clothes were gone. He obviously had no intention of returning when he'd snuck out while I was sleeping. Yet, for some reason, I refused to leave. Sitting on a leather couch in the bustling grand atrium, I stared at the hotel entrance doors. Maybe he'd change his mind? Maybe he'd hopped on a bus and made it halfway to California, and then regretted leaving? What if he came running back and I wasn't here? Then I remembered he had my phone number and hadn't called me. Reality was sinking in even deeper. A couple walked arm in arm through the front doors. She was wearing a tight white dress and wore a long veil, carrying a round bouquet of red roses. He was wearing a suit, with his undone tie hanging loosely around his neck and a rose pinned to his lapel. I watched as he pulled her to him for a long, passionate kiss before heading to the reception desk, smiling. Tears rolled down my cheek. It wasn't the first time today. "Just get married?" An older woman carrying a tub overflowing with quarters sat down across from me. She had white hair styled in a big puffball that looked like it could withstand a typhoon. The blank look on my face was a dead giveaway that my mind was somewhere else. "I'm sorry?" Her eyes pointed down to my hands. I was absently twisting the ring on my finger. My wedding ring. No, it's not a real wedding band. It was a joke. The joke was on me. She nodded. Would have been married 50 years next week. I assumed she lost her husband. I'm sorry.
What for?
You said would have. Did your husband pass away?
Hell no. I'm not that lucky. Bastard turned out to be a liar, cheat, and a gambler.
So what did you do?
Pulled up my big girl panties, kicked him out, and divorced his ass almost 40 years ago.
I smiled. It was the first one since my shower this morning.
There you go. Pretty girl like you, that smile should always be on your face.
Thank you.
So, what did the bastard do?
The name she used for the man who wronged me didn't go unnoticed. I shook my head. He left without saying goodbye.
Sounds like he's a coward.
I was crushed and felt like a fool. But she was right, and I was only making matters worse by sitting around waiting for him. I knew he wasn't coming back for me. I hated to admit it, but Chance was a coward. A selfish prick who didn't have the balls to even say goodbye. I let out a frustrated sigh and stood.
Thank you. For what?
Reminding me to pull up my big girl panties. The owner of the pet boarding place greeted me with a smile.
Overall, he was very good. Scared the heck out of us when he dropped to the ground at one point. But then we remembered what you said about the occasional fainting. We gave him a bath, so he should smell fresh and clean for your ride back.
Esmeralda Snowflake ran into my arms before circling around me repeatedly. He seemed flustered. Taking him by a leash, we walked out to my packed car in the parking lot. This was the final stop before leaving Vegas. I was walking around in a daze. None of this seemed real. At any given moment, I still half expected to hear his voice coming from behind me.
Aubrey. You didn't think I'd really leave you, did you, Princess?
My chest felt full, like it could burst at any moment. But shock was preventing me from letting out the sadness and despair held captive inside of me. I let Esmeralda into the back and took my place in the driver's seat, unable to garner the energy to start the car. Looking behind me, I said,
"This is it. It's just us now. Are you ready?"
The goat startled me by jumping through the center console and into the front. I watched as he sniffed the passenger seat repeatedly and let out a few frantic baa sounds. It seemed like he was really trying to communicate something to me. I wondered if he sensed that Chance wasn't coming back. Animals are funny that way.
"He's gone.
No more chance, I said, rubbing the back of his furry head gently and swallowing the pain of my words. I repeated in a whisper, he's gone. The animal started circling around in the seat until he finally stopped and rested his head down. Nothing could have prepared me for what happened next. What sounded like a whimper escaped him. He couldn't be crying. As the sounds got louder and louder, I came to the conclusion that he was. This sweet animal wanted Chance and either understood what I just said or had a sixth sense. When he looked toward me with his sad eyes, it was at that moment that I finally let go. Everything came pouring out as I leaned my forehead against the steering wheel and sobbed. In just a little over a week, I'd found my greatest happiness and suffered my biggest heartbreak. It felt like I was born again, only to be destroyed by the very thing that gave me a new lease on life. Even though we'd slept together less than 24 hours ago, Chance seemed so far away now, like it was all a dream. The soreness between my legs from our one night together, our first and last, was the only evidence that it was real. I wiped my eyes. Big girl panties, big girl panties, big girl panties. When I finally developed the courage to drive off, it seemed I had a new co-pilot. Esmeralda stayed curled up into the passenger seat. As we passed a sign that read, "Leaving Las Vegas," I wished that the saying were true, that everything that happened in Vegas stayed there. I knew better. What happened to me in Vegas would be something that would follow me around for a long time to come. Chapter 12. 2 months later, and doing my best to settle into my rented bungalow home, I'd come to the conclusion that losing Chance felt a lot like a death. Not only that, I'd pretty much experienced the 5 stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Back in Vegas, at the first realization that he'd left, I was definitely in denial. Throughout the rest of the ride to California, though, anger had started to set in more and more as I focused less on the idea of losing him and more on the simple fact that he'd ditched me. The bargaining phase hit me shortly after arriving in Temecula and stayed for about a week. If only I hadn't thrown myself at him. If only I'd told him how much he meant to me. I blamed myself for his leaving. The 4th phase didn't take long to overshadow all the other stages. Depression was the hardest. It got the best of me for at least a month and a half. Aside from work, I did nothing but come home and wallow in the fact that I would never meet anyone that made me feel like Chance did. Despite how things ended, I truly felt he'd ruined me for all other men. I'd wake up sweating in the middle of the night, painfully aroused from vivid and recurring dreams of being fucked hard by him as he told me over and over how sorry he was, that he loved me, that he'd made a mistake. I'd then cry myself back to sleep. While the depression never fully went away, as each day passed without any word from him, it gave way to the final stage of grief: acceptance. As hard as it was, I finally reached a point where I had to accept the fact that he was never coming back for me. I had no choice but to move on with my life. That meant considering getting back into the dating scene, even if it killed me. One thing was for certain: there was no way I was going to be able to get over him by continuing to lie in bed at night, reliving how it felt to have him inside of me. I still longed for him. That might never go away. If there were such a thing as a 6th stage, it should have been aptly named Purge That Shit. I decided that just being in my car was too painful. More than half of our relationship took place inside that BMW. Every time I would look over to my right, I'd hear his laughter or see him sucking on a pixie stick. Sometimes I swore I could still smell him. The spirit of Chance would always be alive and well in that car. When I got to the dealership to trade it in one sunny Saturday afternoon, I was feeling very emotional. I'd finally settled on an Audi S3. As I was leaving to get into my new car, the woman who'd assisted me with the trade-in called after me. "Ma'am!" I turned around to find her holding the Barack Obama bobblehead in her hand. My chest tightened. "You forgot something. I just pulled it out of your old car. There's a little adhesive left on the dash, but we'll remove it. I thought you might want it." I almost took it from her. Almost. Fighting the tears that were starting to sting my eyes, I held out my palm. "Keep it." In the months after Chance, letting new things into my life seemed to be a bigger challenge than throwing old things out. Jeremy Longthorpe was the CEO of a tech company and also a client of mine. We'd spent countless hours together working on a patent application for one of his recent inventions. Even though he'd made it clear that he was interested in me, I pretended not to notice any of the hints he threw my way. He was really sweet and good-looking enough in a quirky-with-glasses kind of way. Going out with him could have also been a slight conflict of interest, even though the firm had no written rules against dating clients. The truth was, I just didn't feel ready. My mind was still very much preoccupied with memories of Chance. As much as I tried to rid the physical evidence of him, what remained thereafter couldn't be destroyed as easily, no matter how hard I tried. Although he'd hurt me, Chance was still taking up residence inside my head and in my broken heart. Spending extra time with Jeremy was, at the very least, a distraction. He was supposed to be meeting me at the office one Friday evening for a late-night work session. He'd called from the road to let me know he was running a little late and to ask me what kind of takeout I wanted him to bring. My response was, "Something fast foodish and really bad for me. It's been that kind of day." "You got it," he said. He was so nice. The smell of something fried made its way to me before I even noticed him walking through the maze of cubicles and into my corner office. Jeremy was carrying two grease-laden bags. "Since you weren't specific, I got a few different kinds of bad food." "Thank you. I'm starving." He slid some papers to the side to make room. "Why don't we just enjoy our dinner before we get to work?" "Okay," I said, rummaging through the bags. He'd brought food from Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and Popeyes. Popeyes. I just couldn't escape it. Chance was everywhere. Calling dibs on the chicken bites, I started to dig in when Jeremy reached over and grabbed me. "Hey, lay off my bites," I joked. I remembered saying something similar to Chance the first day we met. Little reminders that came in waves, unexpectedly like that, always seemed to bring the pain back in full force. I suddenly stopped eating. Jeremy put his sandwich down. With his mouth full, he asked,
"Are you okay?"
"Yeah, I'm fine."
"Were you mad that I took one of your chicken bites?"
I half smiled. No, it wasn't that at all. He leaned in.
"What is it?"
Looking down, I said, "It's nothing."
"Aubrey, clearly it's not nothing. You were eating like a machine, and you suddenly stopped. What happened?"
The look on my face probably gave me away.
"You can talk to me, you know," he said.
I wanted to tell someone. I hadn't told anyone. Not one single person knew about what happened to me. "You really want to know?"
"Yeah, I do."
Over the next hour, I told Jeremy everything that went down between Chance and me. He listened intently without passing judgment, and it felt so good to let it all out. Nodding slowly with his arms crossed, Jeremy's mouth curved into a sympathetic smile.
"Well, this explains a lot."
"Meaning?" why you shut down whenever I insinuate that we go out. You notice that, huh?
Yes,
I notice everything about you.
He looked down, almost embarrassed for having admitted his feelings in a roundabout way. When he looked up, he said, I really like you, Aubrey.
I like you too. I don't want you to think my hesitation has anything to do with you.
He placed his hand on my arm. Look, now that I know the reason why you're closed off, I think it's even more important that we go out. I promise, I'm not going to expect anything. Let me just be your friend. And if things turn into more, fine. If they don't, worst case scenario, we'll have had a good time together.
I smiled. So, you're asking me out more directly this time.
Yes, I'm asking you to take a chance. Go out with me.
Take a chance. I hadn't used Chance's name when telling the story, so I found Jeremy's choice of words ironic.
Take a chance, huh?
Yes.
Okay, Jeremy.
I will.
Part 2. 2 years later. Chance. Chapter 13. My hands were balled into fists as I sat on my bed, bopping my legs up and down. I'd dreaded this day every bit as much as I'd longed for it. The closer it got, the more my apprehension about leaving this place grew. Looking around at the Spartan gray walls, I could hardly believe that this was really it. Today was the day. Cracking my knuckles, I got up and paced.
What the hell is wrong with you, man? My cellmate Eddie said. This is what you've been waiting for.
You'll see how it feels when your day comes.
Yeah, fucking ecstatic is how I'll feel. You want to trade places? I'd give my right not to be in your shoes right now.
I know you would. It's not that I'm ungrateful to be done. It's just that nothing is the same as when I came in here. This place, it's become my normal. Walking out of here is going to be like walking into a big black hole. At least here I know what to expect.
It's been 2 years, not 40.
A lot can happen in 2 years, mate. I've learned that all too well. When the words came out of my mouth, my heart immediately felt heavier. 2 years ago, I had a mother. Now I didn't. My mother was dead. God, it was so painful to think about her not being around anymore. That was reason enough to want to stay in here and hide from reality. Mum had suffered an aneurysm while driving about a year ago. The fact that I was locked up and couldn't say goodbye to her when she was clinging to life at the hospital was something that I could never forgive myself for. There were a lot of things I couldn't forgive myself for. Eddie's next question threw me for a loop. Are you going to try to find her?
Who?
I knew who.
You know who.
I ran my hands through my hair in frustration. Why did he have to bring her up? No, I said adamantly.
No?
My tone was more insistent.
No.
Why not?
Because it's been 2 fucking years. She's probably married by now, maybe with a baby even. Oh, and there's that minor detail of her hating my guts and wishing I were dead because I broke her fucking heart.
I never intended to tell Eddie about Aubrey. I never intended to tell anyone about her, especially the details of how I left her. One night, I had apparently been talking in my sleep, in the middle of a dream, saying things like, Aubrey, I'm sorry, so fucking sorry. I'd woken Eddie up, and he dragged it out of me. The dreams were recurring, and continued to happen on and off, to the point where Eddie had dubbed them Aubreys.
You had an Aubrey again last night, he'd say. You don't know for a fact that she wishes you ill will.
What does it matter, Eddie? Even if she's not married, the whole point of sneaking out that morning was to make her hate me, so that she'd move on with her life and not wait 2 whole years for me while I was stuck in this hell. Why the fuck would I have broken her heart intentionally, only to go back and try to be with her again? Aren't you even curious about her? Fuck, of course I was. Shrugging my shoulders, I let out a deep breath and sat back down on the bed,
staring at the wall. I hope she's happy and that she's moved on. I really do. But I sure as hell don't want to put myself through witnessing that firsthand. Well, it's your decision. I just don't want you to regret it later. From what I can see, that shit traumatized you. Oh, you're a shrink now, eh, Ed? I don't have to be a professional to see it. Look, you're a good guy. She'd be proud of you if she saw it the way I do. You've made the best of your time here more than anyone I've seen come and go before. I'd damn well tried. I'd taken some classes toward finishing my degree, and even organized a soccer program for the inmates in the adjoining juvenile hall. I was determined not to let these years be a total waste, to make something good out of them. If being here meant giving up everything, it was damn well not going to be for nothing. There was no doubt I'd be leaving prison a different person, not a happier one, but a stronger one. Eddie interrupted my thoughts. Let me ask you this. What if you found out this chick was out there somewhere, still single? Don't you think what you had is worth risking disappointment for a shot at a second chance? Before I could answer, the long, slow creak of the prison cell door opening echoed through the halls. I looked at Eddie. I guess this is it. He hugged me, patting my back. When you start to feel down, think about this. If nothing else, Chancy boy, you're still one of the best-looking dudes ever to leave prison with his ass intact. I broke out into almost hysterical laughter. I was definitely going to miss him. You're a good bloke. You've always had a knack for showing me the bright side of things. Glad I could do that for you. I'll keep in touch, eh? I said, exiting the cell. I let out a deep breath as I followed the prison guard through the halls amidst the heckling, swearing, and applause of my fellow inmates. He took me to a room where I signed the release papers. This felt surreal. I definitely expected to be happier about leaving. Instead, the fact that I was about to become a free man left me feeling surprisingly numb. I waited alone until he returned with a large plastic Ziploc containing my belongings. Opening that bag was like opening a time capsule of an abandoned life. There were my jeans and navy pullover sweatshirt that I'd been wearing when I turned myself in, along with my wallet, phone, and watch. My iPhone was dead, so I asked the guard if he could find me a charger. Since it was an older phone, no one seemed to have the right kind. Apple had apparently come out with two new versions since my imprisonment began. That figured. The guard was finally able to find someone in the office with a charger that fit my phone. You can charge your phone in here, get dressed, and then you're free to go. I nodded. Thank you, sir. I plugged the charger into the wall and proceeded to change into my clothes. After several minutes, a light illuminated the screen of my phone as the device turned on. I waited a bit longer to allow the battery to gain enough juice to last the trip to surprise my sister. I was originally going to have her pick me up, but I decided to keep Mum instead. When it was time to walk out, I felt like a fish out of water. My footsteps past the guard booth were intentionally slow. The bright sunshine outside the gates was a shock to my system. There I was, standing in front of the massive prison building, wearing the same clothes from 2 years ago, and having no clue what to do with myself. It felt like the day I turned myself in was just yesterday, and a lifetime ago all at once. How did one become reacquainted with his own life? I felt like asking myself, where did we leave things again? I looked around me. There should have been a guidebook of what the fuck to do with yourself when you're let out of prison. When you're locked up, it seems like your life is on pause. You come out expecting and wanting everything to be exactly the same, but knowing damn well that it's not. All I fucking wanted right then was to go back to exactly where my life left off. She was where my life left off. What I wouldn't have given to snap my fingers and have her pull up to the jail in the BMW with that stinking animal in the back seat. One could only dream. My mind was heading into delusional and dangerous territory. I shook my head and pulled out my phone to look up the number for a car service, then remembered I had no data plan.
Miraculously, the internet seemed to work. My phone was part of a family plan with my sister, and she must have continued paying the bill. I decided to walk to the nearest train station instead of taking a cab. Before I started the trek, I happened to click on my photo library. Big fucking mistake. It opened up to the last picture taken. It was of Aubrey. There she was. Oh, God. My heart felt like it came alive again after a 2-year hiatus. Princess. Suddenly the emotions I was hoping to suppress had appeared in all of their glory, completely overpowering the numbness I'd experienced just minutes earlier. I'd almost forgotten how beautiful she was. Aubrey never knew I took that picture. I'd snapped it of her sleeping peacefully in the hotel room, right before I left. I wanted to always remember that moment. Our fucking wedding night! It was supposed to be fake, but it felt all too real. Nothing had ever felt more real in my entire life. Now I was cursing at myself, forever thinking that taking that photo was a good idea. I should have deleted every single last image of her, so that I'd never have to look at what I lost. The heart that I damn well knew I'd shattered into a million pieces. At the time, I truly felt my leaving her the way I did was for her own good. I knew what kind of person Aubrey was. She would have waited every single day of those 2 years for me. That wasn't fair. After everything she'd been through, she deserved her fresh start. A new city, a new life. She was on the verge of finally starting to live the life she wanted. I couldn't drag her down, couldn't make her spend 2 more years lonely and sad. She deserved better. Fucking her was definitely not part of the plan. Several times during the trip, I'd almost lost my control. But that night in Vegas was the last straw. I'd tried with all of my might to avoid giving in, but I wasn't strong enough. I came apart when she stormed into my room. I'd never made love to anyone like that in my life, and to this day, I didn't regret it. That night with her meant everything to me. My finger lingered over the photo. I couldn't get myself to slide back through to the others, but I also knew I'd never delete them for as long as I lived. When I stuck my phone back into my pocket, my fingers touched a piece of metal. I took it out. Gleaming in the sunlight was the fake gold wedding band that I'd still been wearing the day I turned myself in. Twirling it between my thumb and index finger, anger started to build up inside of me. I stood there, staring at the ring, trying to figure out why I was so fucking angry all of a sudden. It was because I was starting to doubt whether I'd made the right decision. Eddie's question from earlier, the one I never answered, replayed in my head. Let me ask you this. What if you found out this chick was out there somewhere still single? Don't you think what you had is worth risking disappointment for a shot at a second chance? Placing the ring on my finger, I answered the question. Fuck yes. It would be worth it. I took the phone out of my pocket. My heart was pounding out of my chest as I typed into Google, Aubrey Bloom, Temecula. Chapter 14. 2 years and 2 weeks ago.
Will the defendant please rise?
I stood. My lawyer stood with me.
Mr. Bateman, has your attorney explained the charges that you are pleading guilty to today?
Yes, Your Honor.
Before I can accept your guilty plea, I must be confident that you understand the charges against you. The effect of your guilty plea, and that you are entitled to a trial. The procedure that we do here today is called allocution. I will ask you a series of questions, and then you will be given an opportunity to make a statement on your own behalf before sentencing. Do you have any questions about this procedure?
No, Your Honor.
You have been charged with a violation of California Penal Code 242, felony battery with serious bodily injury. Has your attorney explained the elements of this crime to you?
Yes, Your Honor, he has.
And do you understand that you are entitled to a trial by a jury of your peers, and that a plea of guilty today will effectively waive that right?
I do. Yes, I understand.
And do you wish to waive that right today and plead guilty to the crime that you have been charged with?
I do.
In your own words, can you please state the elements of the crime that you are charged with?
I am charged with physically injuring another person and causing him serious bodily harm.
Okay, Mr. Bateman. This court finds that you understand the nature of the crime with which you are charged and the implications for your plea today. The district attorney and your attorney have put forth a plea bargain for the court to accept. One of the conditions of this plea bargain requires that you provide the explicit details of the crime you have committed and the reason the crime has been committed. This removes any doubt as to the nature of your guilt. Are you prepared to provide the court with your statement at this time?
I turned my head and looked back at the mostly empty court. A bailiff was picking dirt from under his fingernails. A few men in gray suits had their heads down and were texting away on their phones. It was as if nothing earth-shattering was happening. This was an everyday mundane occurrence. There was only one face that looked shattered in the gallery. I'd done my best to get her not to come, but she insisted. There, in the third row of the courtroom, sitting alone on one of the worn wooden pew-style benches, sat my sister Adele. Her nose was red and tears were streaming silently down her face. I hated that she was going to hear the details all over again. Returning my attention to the waiting judge, I nodded and spoke quietly. Yes, Your Honor, I'm ready.
All right. What say you, Mr. Bateman? Tell the court what happened on the night of July 10th.
I swallowed hard. On the night of July 10th, I went to the home of a drug dealer and threatened him. The judge interrupted me and spoke to my attorney.
This is an alleged drug dealer, correct? The victim has not been convicted of any crime?
My attorney responded, Yes, Your Honor, the victim has not been convicted of any crime. Ain't that a kick in the ass? I'll be a convicted felon before all of the real criminals. The judge directed the next part to me.
Mr. Bateman, you can either refer to the victim as the victim, the alleged drug dealer, or by his name. Anything else will not be tolerated. Do you understand?
My jaw clenched so tight I thought I might crack a pearly white, but I nodded. There was no fucking way I was calling that piece of shit a victim. Adele was the only victim in this whole tragedy.
Go on.
As I was saying, I went to the home of the alleged drug dealer, Darius Marshall, and threatened him. The alleged drug dealer was the boyfriend of my sister. It's my understanding that he had a dispute with another alleged drug dealer. I threatened Darius to tell me where the other drug dealer was. The police had been looking for the other alleged dealer for 2 weeks and weren't making any progress. I wanted to help. Darius refused to tell me where the guy was.
And why were the police looking for this other alleged drug dealer?
I looked at the bench and then back at my sister. She looked broken. Taking a deep breath, I continued. He raped my sister to get even with Darius. And before he'd left her beaten and scarred, he told her he'd be back again. It was the first time the judge's face softened.
And what did you do when Darius Marshall refused to give you the information you wanted?
It was a small victory, but the judge finally stopped calling Darius the victim too.
I attacked him. Were any weapons involved in the attack?
I looked to my attorney and back to the judge. I don't believe so, Your Honor.
You don't believe so, meaning you aren't sure?
Well, no weapons were recovered at the scene, and I don't recall having one with me. But no, I can't be sure.
And why is that, Mr. Bateman?
because I don't remember most of the attack.
I see. What is the last thing that you are able to recall?
I knew, but I damn sure didn't want to repeat it out loud. She was so fragile already. My lawyer whispered to me, "You need to do this, Chance." I cleared my throat. Darius said something to me, and that's the last thing I can recall.
And what is it that he said, Mr. Bateman?
My attorney had warned me not to show anger. It took every ounce of willpower that I had to unclench my fists and speak. He said, "My sister was a crack whore, and she might as well have gotten the first one under her belt, because she would be taking cock down her throat in exchange for a dime bag by next week." The judge looked sympathetic momentarily.
"And do you know the nature of the injuries that Darius Marshall sustained?"
"As far as I've been told, he had a broken nose, a fractured eye socket, a concussion, and a few broken ribs."
"And you recall none of the actions that led to these injuries?"
"No, Your Honor, I don't. I remember what I already told you, and the next thing I recall is him saying, 1925 Harmon Street.
"All right, then, Mr. Bateman. We're almost done here. I have a few additional questions before we will break and then come back this afternoon for sentencing."
I nodded.
"Do you regret your actions, Mr. Bateman?"
The last question was a bone of contention between my lawyer and me. While he didn't outright tell me to lie, I could read between the lines. But I'd come this far. I was going to stand tall. Not 3 hours after Darius was carted away in an ambulance, the dealer that attacked Adele was arrested. I looked straight into the eyes of the judge and told the honest-to-God's truth. No, I don't regret my actions. It was nearly 4 by the time the judge called us back into the courtroom. He took off his glasses and rubbed his eyes before speaking.
"Mr. Bateman, do you understand that as a result of your guilty plea, you may lose certain valuable civil rights, such as the right to vote, the right to hold public office, the right to serve on a jury, and the right to possess a firearm?"
Even after having 2 months to think about the consequences of my actions, I didn't care about what I lost. Only that Adele could sleep at night again.
"I understand, Your Honor." "Okay, then, Mr. Bateman, your plea deal with the district attorney to serve 2 years is found to be an adequate punishment and is therefore accepted by this court. While the court sympathizes with what your family has gone through, our legal system must be trusted to serve its intended purposes. We cannot have vigilantes running all over the city avenging crimes as they see fit. Your request for time to get your affairs in order is granted, with the condition that you turn in your passport and do not leave the state of California. You are hereby ordered to surrender to the Los Angeles County Correctional Facility in 14 days. The judge slammed his gavel, and just like that, I was a convicted felon.
Chapter 15. Even though my place was blocks from the beach, the smell of the ocean permeated the air. I took a deep breath and filled my lungs with freedom. Damn, it smelled good. The last thing I did before turning myself in for 2 years of hell was check my sister into rehab. I knew she did well. I saw it on her face every other Saturday when she came to visit. Yet for some reason, I was suddenly nervous to show up unannounced and surprise her. When I unlocked the heavy metal door to my place, pop music blasted through the open-air loft I called home. I smiled hearing it, even though her shit taste in music drove me up the wall growing up. Adele? I lived in a renovated warehouse. Sound was normally muted from the high ceilings, but it was completely lost to the howlish sound of Taylor Swift blaring through the indoor speakers. "Adele!" I called slightly louder. After everything she'd been through, I didn't want to startle her. I had no idea if she was still skittish. After the attack, she jumped if anyone walked into a room,
even when she knew they were there. I dropped my key in the bowl on the table near the door and headed to the kitchen. A man, wearing a dress shirt and boxers, was ironing on my granite counter. We spotted each other at the same moment. He held up the iron like a weapon. I held up my hands in surrender. Is Adele here? Who are you? Relax, mate. I spoke calmly, keeping my hands in the air where he could see them the entire time. If there was one good thing about spending 2 years in prison, I definitely learned how to defuse a violent situation. I'm Adele's brother. I live here. Boxer Boy's eyes flared. Chance? Well, one of us was filled in. That's me. Shit, sorry. I thought you were getting out next week. Overcrowding. I narrowed my eyes on the iron he was still holding. You want to put that thing down now, yeah? Yeah, of course, sorry. He set the iron on the counter and took 2 steps toward me, extending his hand. Harry Beecham, I've heard so much about you. You've got to be shitting me. Harry? Wish I could say the same. Do you think we could stop at the... My sister's voice abruptly halted as she turned the corner into the kitchen. Oh, my God! She almost knocked me over when she flew into my arms. You're here! You're home! I am. Adele held me in a death-like grip. She was crying, but unlike the last time I hugged her, these were tears of happiness. I'd pulled back to take a good look at my little sister. I'd seen her every other week, but I'd only gotten glimpses of what she wanted me to see. She was 22 now, dressed in a skirt and girly blouse, with her hair fastened on top of her head. She looked like a woman. You look different. Grown up. She wiped her tears and smoothed her skirt. This is how I dress for work. I told you. I'm a secretary now. Harry cleared his throat. The bloke was still standing in his boxers. I'm late. I should get going. It was great to finally meet you, Chance. I eyed him. I hope you put some pants on first. He gently placed his hand on Adele's shoulder as he passed and spoke softly. Take the morning off. I'll see you this afternoon. Adele smiled at Boxer Boy, then looked at me while biting down on her bottom lip. Sorry, I didn't know. Harold is one of the partners at the accounting firm I work for. An accountant? Yeah. My sister smiled. Not the type I normally go for, huh? My sister had a knack for picking one loser after the next. The crowd she hung out with wasn't exactly conducive to meeting CPAs. As long as he's good to you, I couldn't help myself, and keep some damn pants on when I'm around. Adele and I spent the entire morning catching up. Talking about Mum was the hardest part. Things could have gone either way for my sister, after what happened 2 years ago. Our mother's death could have really set her back. I was relieved to find she truly had turned her life around. It made everything I'd went through worth it in the end. She seemed happy. So, Adele took the mugs we'd been drinking from and placed them in the sink. She leaned her bum against the counter and folded her arms over her chest.
Are you going to see her?
Who? Why was I playing this game again? I knew damn well who she was referring to.
Your wife?
Her eyes pointed to the ring I'd already forgotten was on my finger. I shoved my hand into my pocket. She's not my wife.
Adele rolled her eyes. Your fake wife, whatever. Are you going to see her?
Don't start, Adele. One lonely visit, I'd turned into a Mary and spilled my guts about Aubrey to my sister. I regretted it instantly. She spent the next 23 months trying to talk me into writing to Aubrey and telling her where I was. She even suggested she go visit Aubrey to have a chat and keep the hope alive.
Have you looked her up yet?
I've been out for 3 hours.
My sister squinted. So that's a yes, then.
I shook my head. Not responding, but she knew the answer. I'm going to take a long, hot shower. It's been a while. The look of hope on my sister's face dropped. I walked to her and lifted her chin so our eyes met. Hey, I'm proud of you. Let's not go backwards anymore. I'm free. You're wearing a damn bun in your hair and dating a guy who thinks a spoon was invented for stirring. Everything turned out pretty good, I'd say, yeah? Her eyes welled up again, and she gave me one last hug. My sister was good. I could sleep soundly tonight. It might just be the first time since before I left Aubrey sleeping in Las Vegas. At the thought, I reached up and rubbed at my chest to soothe the ache.
Will you be here when I get home tonight?
I was actually thinking of heading up north. See about a job opportunity, I lied. Suddenly, I was in the mood for another road trip. My anxiety grew as I merged from State Route 91 to I-15 and started to see the first signs for Temecula. I had no idea where I was going or what the fuck I was going to do when I got there, but I needed to see she was okay. Stopping at a combo gas station grocery store, I stocked up on typical stalker snacks. Fun Dip, Sour Patch Kids, popcorn, and of course, pixie sticks. The cashier looked at me like I might be luring kids into the back of my van at the corner of the local elementary school. Sweet tooth, I offered with a shrug. He didn't really give a shit. It may be sunny in this part of California, 330 days out of 365, but it started to rain as I pulled my pickup truck onto Jefferson Avenue in downtown Temecula. It was nearly 5 o'clock. People dressed in suits were starting to come out of the office buildings that lined the street. I found the tall building marked 4452, parked a half block away, and slumped down in my seat and waited. With low music and a sack full of candy, I could sit here and bask in the simple things for half the night. Who knew I'd be such an expert stalker? 2 hours passed before I saw her. She stepped out from the building and stood under the overhang as the rain pelted down on the sidewalk in front of her. Not wanting to be seen, I slouched even further into my seat, eyeing her just above the steering wheel. She looked beautiful. Her auburn hair was longer, the waves looser, cascading halfway down her back. An emerald green silky blouse made her contrasting pale skin even more striking. A black skirt hugged her hips, and even though I couldn't see the back, I imagined how the material clung to her shapely ass. Gorgeous. Full of all the class and sass that I knew she was. It had been 2 years. Yet what I felt for her hadn't dimmed one bit, which is why my knuckles were turning white as I gripped the steering wheel when I saw a man's hand wrap around her tiny waist. Motherfucker! I hadn't expected her to be single, but I wasn't prepared for what I saw. Some asshat in a navy suit and glasses that looked like Clark Kent's opened an umbrella and snuggled Aubrey close to him. My Aubrey! I couldn't breathe as he whisked her into the parking lot across the street, shielding her from the rain, and disappeared out of sight. Minutes later, a car edged out onto the street, waiting for traffic to let it in. I was sure it was them, before I even saw the smiling faces in the car. A black goddamned BMW. His name was probably Biffy. Dejected, I sat in my truck for another 2 hours, rather than follow them. If just getting a load of her walking with some bloke tore me to shreds, I wasn't ready to see any more. But I also wasn't ready to leave. Getting pissant drunk wasn't in my itinerary. Then again, neither was stalking until a few hours ago. I checked into a motel only a few blocks from Aubrey's office on Jefferson and walked to the adjacent bar before even seeing my room. Now, 3 hours later, I was sufficiently stewed. Carla the bartender and I hit it off right away.
You ready for another one, Aussie?
I held up my glass and rattled the ice. Keep 'em coming, Carla Babes. She walked over, gave me a sultry smile, and filled my glass. This woman was seriously sexy, like a 1940s pin-up model,
Her hair was all done in those vintage old-school curls on top of her head. From the neck up, she looked like an American throwback. But her arms were full sleeves of colored ink, a modern-day rocking Jessica Rabbit. I was normally a light drinker. Beer or wine was more my thing than hard liquor. And it had been 2 years since I last ingested the